Thanks for listening to the Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
Now let's get this party started. You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Saturday on Fox, the MLS is back. Catch Austin FC as they make their league debut against Carlos Vela and LAFC. The action kicks off at 5:30 Eastern on Fox and the Fox Sports app.
Carlos Vela is great, by the way. You made me think yesterday I shouldn't give up my LAFC tickets because you said you wanted to use them.
Yes. I'm willing to let you spend your money on them so you can give me tickets.
By the way, Sarah Kustok, Nets analyst, she was the first woman to be named a solo full-time color analyst in the NBA, and they have won best local broadcast for years. Very, very funny. If Ian Eagles on a broadcast, you're going to laugh. He's one of the funniest guys ever. But my favorite part about Sarah is she led the nation in three-point shooting back when you weren't supposed to shoot him. Like, if you shot him back in Sarah's day, you were a ball hog. But she will not. She is not going to buy into that narrative at all. She led America in three-point shooting. Isn't that something? To lead America in anything, and Sarah Kustok, broadcaster, joining us now live. She was not a gunner. These were good shots, folks. She was not a gunner.
Tell America. That's the story. That's the story I'm going with now, Colin.
So
you're the only one who perpetuates these records for me, so I appreciate it.
You know, it's the Brooklyn Nets. I said this earlier, and I think it has some credibility. I said I fell for the Clippers last year. I love the roster. They had this great talent. And then all of a sudden they got to the bubble and you started hearing, well, of course they don't have any chemistry. They never played together. You can't create chemistry in the playoffs. That's where all the good teams and good coaches are. And I look at the Nets and I think, we know they're great, but good Lord, they've played together 7 games. There's got to be, aren't you a little concerned that, you know, at some point you're going to be trying to create something that is virtually impossible to create in the middle of a playoff run against really good teams and really good coaches?
I would push back, Colin, on your comparison in this sense. And while I understand the reasons for it, given you looked at the LA Clippers, I was all in on them last year as well. The depth, the talent, strong personalities, though, as well. I think this Brooklyn Nets team is very different when you talk about chemistry off the court. Now, granted, the big three have only played together for 7 games. However, they've been able to win due to the fact of all the complementary players and the way in which they've all bought in for the system that they're running, taking advantage of opportunity and roles. And I think more than anything, as you see here, it's genuine how much these guys like each other. So this isn't a circumstance where players are injured or not around. They're there, they're around. And I think we have seen that type of connectivity when they've been on the floor. And they've also, over the course of the last 29 games, have won 23. So one game back, of course, there was a game against Philly last night, which they lost. So they're one game back of that first spot in the Eastern Conference behind the 76ers. But overall, as you know, the Clippers, it was well reported and documented. There was some underlying tensions, maybe some viewed preferential treatment. And so I think the chemistry, not just on the court, but off the court, is very different. And to me, that is so impactful when you're talking about trying to come together for a postseason run.
So over the weekend, I watched some Lakers Brooklyn, and Andre Drummond, and he is prone to do this against the Nets, was a monster. He was really tough. And it is interesting. Historically, it is hard to win a championship virtually in the last 25 years only once as an NBA champ won that wasn't top 10 defensively. That was the Kobe Shaq Lakers, who were number one the year before and kind of mailed it in the next year before turning it on in the playoffs and being the number one defensive team in the playoffs and winning their second title. When I watched Andre Drummond, I thought he's a little bit of a bully against the Clippers and they don't have a ton of rim protection. How concerned are you that the Lakers, you know, and I would say Philadelphia, these are big, Ben Simmons is big, Joel Embiid, Tobias Harris, they're athletic, they're big. How do you mitigate that? How do you work around the fact this is not a great defensive team and you can bully them a little down low?
That's an excellent question, and I think that is a very valid concern, as we saw what Embiid was able to do last night.
Yep.
Again, there's been pieces missing. The breaking news that came out today that LaMarcus Aldridge is going to retire due to a irregular heartbeat, and just the piece, how albeit how big or small, that he was going to fill to give a different set of profiles to the depth of the front court of this Nets team. DeAndre Jordan was essentially out of the rotation. He's now played in the last two games, so he's going to be called on again, and he's someone who they expected to be a big body to battle with. You got a young player, Nicholas Claxton, who was hurt for the better part of the early part of this season, and he's got a lot of assets that he brings to the table with athleticism and versatility, but not necessarily a big, strong body. Blake Griffin is another guy, but I do think that's an area where you look at it can be a spot that teams can exploit,
yeah.
Especially when you're looking at teams that have size like the Lakers, like the 76ers. I think that goes back to the fact of, okay, what areas can the Nets take advantage? Where are their strengths? How can they give you a front of versatility, especially on the offensive end, but also defensively as well? And their switching scheme, 1 through 5, they've continued to improve in that area. And I think the biggest thing for me when you talk about defense in this Nets team is not so much on just that end of the floor, but it's taking care of the basketball. And so when you look at the numbers recently, the eye test, why they've improved defensively, they're not just giving teams easy runouts. They're not just turning the basketball over and having such a extraordinarily extra amount of possessions to their opponent. So I think that will continue to be a key for them as they try to improve on the defensive end.
Sarah Kustok, Fox Sports NBA analyst, and the Nets broadcasters as well. You know, It's funny. When I was talking to Frank Vogel, a Laker coach, about a month ago, and he said, with great players, you manage them. With good players, you coach them. And he said, it was Terry Stotts. He was talking about Damian Lillard. I said, what do you do last minute to go in the game? You trail by one. He said, you don't really have to. You just get the ball to Dame and let him figure it out. The key is just get him the ball. When you have three of the top four or five offensive players, Kyrie, Harden, KD, Is Nash more managing than coaching? How do you offensively, on the offensive end, how much do you get in their ear and how much do you just let them create?
That's an excellent question. I wish we could call up Steve Nash right now. I think one of the reasons why Nash has resonated so well with these players is because he's understood, of course, when to coach, when to direct, and when to allow these guys to problem solve themselves. Many coming in with championships themselves. They played together on Team USA for many years, so there is a familiarity amongst them. But I think overall, when you have some of the most lethal, potent offensive players that the game has seen all on the floor, a lot of it is going to come down to their instincts, their decision-making.
That's right.
We have seen a level of their unselfishness, but it's read and react to what the defense is giving them and presenting and how they're able to attack that. And I think that that to me falls more on those three players and the five guys on the floor than it does with necessarily just what play you're drawing up, because it may be the options that go after that first look and the first action that you see.
What's the best team, not named the Brooklyn Nets, you've seen this year, where you literally thought, wow, they could be a problem? They really match up.
This has been such an interesting year due to so many of the injuries. I mean, you've got to look at the Lakers, just given the fact they're defending champs and the depth that they have on this roster, what they've been able to do. But despite the fact that a lot of the games I've seen, it's been without LeBron James and Anthony Davis, those injuries. The Clippers have been so impressive. And I think given what happened last year, there's maybe a little hesitancy to see, okay, how much will this regular season now continue on into what we see in the postseason? Philadelphia, Joel Embiid has been an absolute beast. I mean, I just got to see them last night and what he's able to do, along with the added shooting. Tobias Harris having one of the best seasons of his career under Doc Rivers now, once again. Ben Simmons, you mentioned. So there are a lot of different teams you look at. And again, we go back to the Milwaukee Bucks in the Eastern Conference, who I think a lot of our judgment is placed on. We've seen them roll through the regular season. What will they look like when you get to postseason matchups? But it kills you to see Jamal Murray go down. I was really excited about what we saw to Denver, and I'm not even mentioning the Utah Jazz, who, you know, have been atop the league for pretty much the duration of the entire season, just how complete they look and how dynamic they fit together, and how much respect I have for what Quinn Snyder has done. So I think this is just going to be a really interesting postseason when we get down to it. But I think so much is going to be predicated just on the health of these rosters and these teams.
Yeah, no, there is no question about that. You can almost feel like James Harden, AD, LeBron, if they were pressed into duty, could probably sneak in. But the point is, when you're that good, and you've been in the playoffs, I would make the argument Harden, AD, and LeBron are better off not playing and just get completely healthy. Sarah Kustok, Fox Sports, Nets as well. It's great seeing you. You are always dialed in. We appreciate that, Sarah. Thank you so much.
Appreciate you, Colin. Enjoy. Great to see you guys.
All right. Great to see you. Part of the Nets broadcast team, which is outstanding. Yeah, I mean, I said this last a couple weeks ago. It may have been last week or the week before. Is when the bottom of the NBA is so weak, and it is, the bottom 7-8 teams, you don't see that in the NFL where the Jags beat the Colts and when the Rams lost to the Jets. You gotta play through pain in the NFL. You gotta be ready to play. The Raiders beat the Saints and the Chiefs. So, but in the NBA, there's about 8 teams at the bottom that are kind of, if not tanking, they're rebuilding. You can beat those teams without LeBron, KD, James Harden, so why play your players? That, and I know people say, well, I pay my money, but if think about this. I went for a jog yesterday. I thought about this. I understand that you go to a game and want to see the stars. I do not think it's good for the league or the Lakers when LeBron and AD are out. I don't want to take my – if I live in San Bernardino and it's an hour and a half drive, I don't want to go to the game if LeBron's not there. That's who my son wants to watch. Like, I don't love load management. But if you owned a business – you owned a business. And because that's the guy – he owns a business. He goes to the games. He doesn't see him and he complains. I get it. But if you owned a business and you had a really good general manager, you were the owner and he was great, and you could take days off and the business didn't miss, and the competition in your industry was pretty soft, so you could take an extra month a year off and it would not affect at all your business, wouldn't you? So that's what Brooklyn and the Lakers are doing. They're saying, why not rest all these guys for the playoffs? Now, it may not be good for the league, but it's good for the Nets and it's good for the Lakers. I would do the exact same thing. I mean, it was so funny. The minute KD could come back, suddenly James Harden, who's never hurt, suddenly is like, oh, my hamstring, I'm going to take 3 weeks up. Well, that's what I would do because I've seen Harden be worn out in the playoffs. So get him out of here for 2 weeks. I know it's not good for the league, but if the doctors say it's a hamstring, it's a hamstring. It's good for the Lakers and it's absolutely good for the Nets. If you can win without playing your starters, especially when AD's brittle and KD's brittle and Kyrie's brittle, don't play them. It's an issue. Every league's got an issue or two. And what really helps the NFL is the bottom of the league can still beat you. The bottom of the NBA is bad. By the way, baseball faces a little of this. We're about 7 teams at the bottom of baseball look like AAA baseball teams. When the Dodgers can crush you and they don't play Mookie Betts or Cody Bellinger, why not rest them occasionally? Give them nights off. Keep them healthy. It's a long season.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Joy Taylor with the news.
No.
Turn on the news.
This is The Herd Line News.
Robert Saleh has the tough task of trying to get the Jets back on track this season. He's had a lot of success as the defensive coordinator of the 49ers, and Jets defensive tackle Sheldon Rankins is expecting Saleh to bring that success with him to New York. He said, I love the way they're always attacking, seeing the way he developed those guys when they were in San Fran and the type of havoc they caused. I mean, truly winning games to their front four, that got me excited that we'll be able to turn this thing around. He was an excellent defensive coordinator.
Well, and I will say this, Joy. The strength of the Jets is that defensive front,
right?
And they added Chad Lawson. So that's the one unit. So Saul is good with that. It's the Carl Lawson, excuse me. It is the one unit they don't have to draft. They do not. They can literally, that's the only unit in that team they don't need any more help.
When you watch that 49ers defense, I mean, a big conversation even in the Super Bowl year was just how dominant and how tough, and I like the word havoc being used there. Right. Like, that's what they would do. They would just destroy you and blow plays up. And they played with a certain a certain type of energy. Like that, they had a certain identity, that 49ers defense. So I do have no doubt that he's going to get that defense flying around again if he can get the right pieces there. Obviously, yeah. They had a lot of talent on that team as well. But they were fourth in total defense from 2017 to 2020, third in pass defense, 13th in rush defense. Like they were a dominant defensive front, a dominant defensive team. There's a lot that needs to be done with the Jets, obviously, and as with any team, the first piece is getting the quarterback and starting to develop that. But for me, with new head coaches, especially if you are a type of coach that, you know, really lean towards one side of the ball, and that, like, obviously he's a defensive coordinator, who you hire as your offensive coordinator, who you hire as your assistant, to me, really will help determine your success in your first couple years, because you want guys that buy into what you're doing but also are extremely skilled on that side of the ball, so that you can focus on not only learning how to be a head coach but also making sure you have your mark on whatever side of the ball your right. you know, your expertise lies in. So the Lakers have fallen in the Western Conference standings with LeBron and AD out. They sit in fifth right now, which means they would not have home court advantage in the playoffs, but Shaq doesn't think the Lakers will have any issues with that.
The difference between the Lakers and any other team, in my opinion, is that the Lakers don't really need home court advantage. Because you got a guy like LeBron and AD, they can steal a game on the opponent's floor. Utah definitely needs home court advantage. All the other, two, three, and four, they definitely need home court advantage for the confidence booster.
Right.
The Lakers do not.
I agree with this. I don't think it's completely irrelevant, but I don't think that it's something that they need to panic about or rush AD and LeBron back to get. Obviously, you would prefer to have home court advantage, but I don't think that it matters when it comes specifically to the Lakers. I would agree with him there. To your point before we started Herdline, like what's going on with sitting players, it probably wasn't the best time for us to all go anti-load management on top of paired with, you know, a condensed season with the shortest offseason ever. There's always injuries. This is not unique to this season. It feels like there's more injuries this year, and, you know, it's happening to a lot of star players, and we want LeBron and AD in the playoffs. Here's the issue. The NBA regular season has no urgency to it.
Yeah.
That's not the players' fault. That's not the media's fault. It's not fans' fault. Maybe it's the league's fault, but maybe not, because that's how they make their money, with having the games on television. So I don't know that there's necessarily a fix for the lack of urgency during the regular season. And I don't think the fix is make all the stars play every single game so that you can, if you are one of the very few fans at this point that can go to games, you can see the star players. I understand it's for the, you know, the television partners as well. But this doesn't benefit the players. Like, you are a star player. You want to be in the playoffs healthy. Well, also, so do the television partners. You don't want to watch the Lakers get bounced in the first round because they don't have AD and LeBron healthy.
Yeah, I mean, listen, if I ran a team, I don't care about the league. I care about me.
Of course.
And so if I ran the Lakers and I'm like above 500, why the hell would I play brittle AD and old LeBron? Doesn't make it. By the way, I totally defend Brooklyn. James Harden, you went 19-4 without KD, and Harden carried you. So when KD's healthy with Kyrie, you can tell what they're doing. Right. Harden never gets hurt. They're like, dude, go take 3 weeks off. So that's a league issue. It's not a team issue. Greg Popovich started this.
He did. This was a long time ago, long before we started
talking about load management. 10, 15 years ago.
You know, I had this conversation this morning about how does it affect the fans? Like, do you think that Brooklyn fans are enjoying this, or Lakers fans enjoying this? I think absolutely. Like, they know they're going to be healthy in the playoffs and have an opportunity to win a championship. They don't care about the regular season. In some ways, the NBA regular season has become kind of a localized sport.
Yeah, I agree. Baseball's got that issue.
Baseball has that issue, and the NBA has kind of become that as well. Whatever team you enjoy watching during the regular season, you'll watch. And, you know, you'll watch some, you know, national televised games and check in with the Nets and the Lakers and, you know, the 76ers and the Celtics and the big brands that are on national television. But night to night, you're going to watch the team that you want to watch, and we're going to follow the big stories. But the postseason, it was what matters.
Well, I would argue this, too. Find me the sport. Football, college and pro football, it's once a week. That is the structure of the sport.
Right.
And those sports, the ratings aren't going down much at all. They still get good numbers. But if you notice, hockey, soccer, NBA and baseball are all struggling with regular season ratings. So I don't believe it's Black Lives Matter. Well, hockey went down more than basketball. I don't believe it's social politics. I don't believe it. Because NFL's got some politics, too. I mean, Trevor Lawrence was talking about politics. What I think is happening culturally in America is that there are so many channels, we live on our phones,
yep,
that the way to get audience is urgency.
Correct.
And the only sport with urgency is college football. By the way, UFC cards, those aren't going down. Golf majors. Now, by the way, the Masters this past weekend, 3 days it was up. Sunday was a snooze. But the sports where there's Olympics, World Cup, UFC, big fight, NFL, those numbers are not going down. I don't buy into all this political stuff. It is harder in America when you have these, you know, baseball, hockey,
yep,
all these sports. We're on our phones to get us off the phone.
Or just away from other content. There's Netflix. There's YouTube. Like, there's social media. There's so many things to distract us. If I don't have to watch this, because they can go on a 3-game losing streak and still win the championship. There's no urgency.
By the way, if you look at pay-per-view numbers with UFC and boxing, they're still doing great. So it's not like we don't like sports. But when you're, like, by the way, when Conor McGregor fights, I'm going to watch that.
Right.
I'm going to buy pay-per-view.
I mean, look at the ratings for the tournament. Tremendous.
Again.
Men and women's.
So sports is fine, but I do think there is a struggle we're both acknowledging.
Yeah.
The struggle is, in America right now, with all of our options, for all these sports with these long regular seasons, it is college basketball's facing this. They're fine in the tournament. It is a real problem in America.
But there's no fix for it.
There is no fix.
Because if you cut games, you're going to cut revenue, which no one's going to agree to.
That's
so
right.
It just is what it is. I don't think it's like the league is suffering. It's just the reality of how the sport is structured.
And by the way, baseball added around. By the way, NFL has added a playoff team.
Right.
Basically saying we're going to add one more really important game in the playoffs. Baseball has added those little, added additional baseball playoff teams. And baseball fans complain about it. But what baseball is saying is, we're fine when you have to watch the games. Well, we're not like a home run derby.
And there's more teams, so that's more cities and fans interested for longer as well. If you watch sports, you watch sports. Doesn't matter what's going on with the political climate. I never buy into that. It's nonsense.
It's
nonsense.
If I like my team and they're playing, I don't give a rip about politics.
No.
If you talk about it, I'm not turning the game off.
No.
I've never bought into that. I'm so over boycott. I'm boycotting boycotts. I am over boycotts. Joy with the news.
Well, that's the news.
And thanks for stopping by.
The Herd Line.
Julian
news.
Edelman's a Hall of Famer. I'm going to make that argument. Can't in or can't out? We'll talk about players. In, out, Hall of Fame, my thoughts.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
Hey, it's me, Rob Parker. Check out my weekly MLB podcast, Inside the Parker, for 22 minutes of piping hot baseball talk featuring the biggest names and newsmakers in the sport. Whether you believe in analytics or the eye test, we've got all the bases covered. New episodes drop every Thursday, so do yourself a favor and listen to Inside the Parker with Rob Parker on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcast.
Check out the How We Reach coaching tool. A free app. Download at reach.gov. Find steps everybody can take to prevent suicide. Download at reach.gov. All right. Of the many things we do on this show that are utter nonsense, we're going to play can't in or can't out. Are these Hall of Famers or not, these players? It's based on the Julian Edelman argument this week, Joy.
Well, let's start with Julian Edelman. Can't on or can't out?
He's Canton.
Canton.
Canton is the home of the Hall of Fame. He is Canton. Okay, there's two or three things you have to remember. He has two seasons with 100-plus catches, the same as Randy Moss and double that of Calvin Johnson. He's one of three receivers in league history with three Super Bowl titles and a Super Bowl MVP. The others are Jerry Rice and Lynn Swann. And by the way, 75% of his catches were in Patriot wins. It can't just be the accumulation of numbers. More big catches last 9-10 years than any player in the league.
Eli Manning, Canton or can't out?
Canton. You cannot tell the story of the NFL without him. Forget the fact that he beat Tom Brady and Belichick twice in Super Bowls with miraculous throws, by the way. It wasn't he made the throw. He's also top 10 NFL history in passing yards and touchdowns. So he's a top 10 quarterback in terms of production, and you can't tell the story of the league without him.
And he never missed games.
Ever.
Matt Ryan, can't or can't out?
Can't out. He doesn't win enough. Six of his last 8 years, doesn't win enough games. He had losing seasons. And by the way, no quarterback over the last decade has accumulated more passing yards in games they lost. So he's just
time.
A lot of junk yards. I like him, a lot of junk yards, and he just simply doesn't win enough games.
Julio Jones.
Easy one, Canton. He's an all-timer. Most receiving yards per game of any player in NFL history, 96. There is no question. He has been. Remember when Atlanta traded a bunch of picks to get him and people freaked out and went, I mean, they gave up a ton of picks to move up and get a wide receiver. He and Calvin Johnson were probably the surest locks at wide receiver in 15 years. Like, there was zero chance they could fail.
And Ndamukong Suh.
Can't out. You know, he had a great rookie year. He had double-digit sacks. He's never duplicated it. I also think he's a freelancer. He's never been long-term solution. Teams like him because of power and he can play. Little bit of a freelancer. Great rookie year. Never duplicated it. Just hasn't been on top five defenses enough. And if you're great, like Aaron Donald, you end up on top five defenses.
Jason Witten.
Yeah, Jason Witten can't. Jason Witten's insane. First of all, in terms of like Cowboys, he beats Michael Irvin, Dez Bryant. I mean, the guy's a machine. Know this, 11-time Pro Bowler. And nobody in this league was better against a zone than Jason Witten. Nobody found the hole, caught it, and sat down better than Jason Witten. He was a great college player at Tennessee, too.
Frank Gore.
I'm going to get pushback. Can't out.
Come on, Colin.
Okay, listen. In 16 NFL years, Frank Gore finished top five in the league in rushing one time. It's a compiler.
Do you see that number at the bottom?
Yeah, he played a bunch of games.
In NFL history.
A bunch of them.
And he has the third most rushing yards in NFL history. How is that not a Hall of Famer?
Well, I mean, listen, a dentist could go to work every day, but if I come out and my teeth still hurt, you're not a great dentist.
No, but there's plenty of running backs. All right, Odell Beckham Jr., can't or can't out?
Can't out. No, not playing enough games. I mean, right, I mean, the bottom line is he would have been his first 4 years, but Jamison Crowder and Cole Beasley have more receiving yards than OBJ in the last 4 years. So does Austin Hooper and Cameron Brate. Cameron Brate's a backup tight end.
Cam Newton.
Not win enough games. It's a can't out. The bottom line is 7 of his last 10 years starting quarterback, losing record in a very winnable division. I mean, Tampa was kind of a mess. Atlanta was hot and cold. And, you know, my knock on Cam is his delivery and his mechanics, I think, have gotten worse. He has the worst completion percentage since entering the league of all quarterbacks with at least 3,000 attempts. He completes 60% of his throws. He's just not consistently accurate enough, and I do think his mechanics have gotten worse.
Ezekiel Elliott.
Can't out. Do you know he's the only running back in NFL history? I just found this out today. To see his rushing yards per game decline in each of his first 5 seasons. Never been a running back. Every year, his numbers decline. He's not the home run hitter he used to be at running back. He really isn't.
The offensive line isn't the same either. Patrick Mahomes.
Need 2 more years, can't out. Here's the reason. Every quarterback to make the Hall of Fame, after starting their career in the Super Bowl era, has at least 65 wins. He's got 38. So he just needs 2 more years. I love you, Nick Wright, but you got to give me more wins in more years than a couple. For hot water that never runs out, go tankless. Tanklessmadesimple.com. It's called Navien. They only heat water when you need it. That's why it never runs out. And powerful ingredients backed by science. Check out mdriveformen.com today. We'll see you tomorrow. It's The Herd.